32.
I'm reading my notes for the next
match. Oh, Bray Wyatt versus The Miz. Right. First off, did nobody think that the match was going to be Bray Wyatt versus The Miz?
When I first saw on Twitter an ad for this match, I wanted to retweet. This sounds like the worst main event ever. So no, I expected this to be a horrible match.
I don't know how I didn't think about it till like they were coming through the curtain, but it suddenly hit me. We're going to watch Bray Wyatt wrestle The Miz. It was even worse than I expected.
It was so much worse than I expected. So listen, everyone. I don't want to be the guy who just hates everything and shits on everything and never has anything nice to say. Some people in this crowd were into the Bray Wyatt character, okay? So there's people out there who enjoy this kind of thing.
Oh, you should have read my timeline after I buried this one.
I don't want people to not enjoy things. But I don't enjoy the stuff myself, okay? I am not their target audience. So I feel guilty, honestly, even reviewing it.
Well, let me say something, Vinny. I'll help you review it, okay? So yes, you're not the target audience, but let's look at this objectively, okay? Not subjectively, like I like the Bray Wyatt character. Okay, the storyline is that there was a home invasion and Bray Wyatt went to the Miz's house and put a fucking scary doll in his kid's crib, which made her cry. All right?
Yes.
All right, that's the backstory. Miz then does a melodramatic fucking promo where he says, "This is the most important match, the most personal match of my entire life. I am not fighting as The Miz. I'm fighting as a man protecting my family." So they play The Miz's music, and he comes out in his stupid trench coat and his stupid glasses, and he does his stupid dance, and he does his whole babyface happy entrance, and he stands in the ring. Then they play the Firefly Funhouse music, and out comes Bray Wyatt. He's in a fucking sweater and his jeans and his street shoes, and he's waving at everybody, and he comes down and he literally stands on the announcer's table facing away from the ring, looking at the people. And do you know what The Miz does?
As I recall, he stood there.
He fucking stands there and looks at this guy who went into his house and put a creepy doll in his 3-year-old's fucking bed. Okay? I had these people on Twitter defending this going, well, the ref was holding him back. Okay, if some motherfucker comes into my house and puts a fucking doll in Paisley's crib, if I'm within 20 feet of this guy, you can have 30 fucking people holding me back. I'm going to get at that guy. Or I'm at least going to fucking try. This asshole stands there. Oh, hell, I'll let this guy do his fucking entrance. I'll twiddle my fucking thumbs right here while this guy stands on the goddamn announce table and fucking poses. Okay? So then they ring the bell. Now we're into the actual pro wrestling aspect of this match. And here's the other flaw. Angry Miz is fucking hilarious. Not a badass. He runs across the ring. He does his stupid deal where he runs corner to corner, throwing the lamest, lightest, shittiest knees. Everything he does looks fake. It's the softest shit you ever saw. He has to put on the angry, mean face. Oh, I'm mad at this fucking guy. I'm going to beat his ass. I'm going to run as slow as I can, but when I get there, I'm going to beat his ass. I'm like, fuck me. The fucking Bray Wyatt doesn't sell a goddamn thing. He just gets hit with stuff, and Miz does this bullshit, and then finally Bray takes him outside, hits his sister Abigail, throws him in the ring, hits another one, and wins. And like, I'm not the biggest fan of the Miz. This whole thing is bullshit, but fuck, could you have made that guy look like a bigger fucking geek?
He got destroyed in the most important and most personal match of his career.
The most personal and important match of his life, where he's fighting for his fucking 3-year-old and his wife. He just gets fucking squashed like a geek.
Actually, Brian, you could make The Miz look weaker and like more of a geek. which is have another guy come in and wipe the mat with Bray Wyatt.
That's true. Daniel Bryan comes in. Listen, hey, here's another one for you, okay? Bray Wyatt went to the Miz's house. He went into his three-year-old daughter's room and tried to scare her with a creepy doll, okay? Bray Wyatt gave Daniel Bryan a fucking haircut. Well, Daniel Bryan comes in. He's so mad about getting his fucking haircut, which is not a bad haircut, by the way. I mean, it's not like there's fucking tufts everywhere. Just buzzed it. Fucking goes in there. He beats the living fuck out of Bray Wyatt.
Just destroys him.
Miz, who, by the way, was the most personal match of his... He just vanishes. I mean, he's gone. Oh, I fucking got beat. I'm going to go to the undisclosed location now. I don't give a shit. He vanishes. Daniel Bryan beats this guy's ass. I was like, objectively, what the fuck was this?
You're being way too kind. So, I'm watching the fucking 45-minute recap video of all this horribleness. And I'm thinking back. Just how many different ways Bray Wyatt has sucked. It's like, I got a new gimmick. We'll put fucking maggots in the ring. That sucks. I'll be a fucking clown. This sucks. I'll put on a creepy mask. Well, the creepy mask is kind of cool. But so, I'm just marveling at this. And he comes out for his entrance. And even put aside the home invasion and how The Miz is the worst babyface since Buff Bagwell on Nitro. Put all that aside. They're playing this wacky children's music. And he comes out in his wacky pants and a sweater. And the championship of the universe around his waist. And a graphic comes up at the bottom of the screen. And it says, Universal Champion Bray Wyatt. It's all in fucking balloon letters. And that was it. Like, a light bulb went off in my head. That's the exact moment I just gave up.
Dude, you left the room.
I don't understand.
You left the room and said you were going home. We had to drag you back in here.
This is not for me. I don't want the guy who is theoretically the face of your company and the best wrestler in the universe to come out doing a wacky dance with balloon animal font.
Hey, so, Vinny, if you promise not to quit, I'm going to read a couple of these, okay?
Couple of what?
So I wrote, if only he debuted in January.
I can't make any promises about not quitting if you read people defending this.
He didn't. Bray Wyatt might have successfully tied up the entire top 10 for worst matches of 2019. Okay? Give me fair warning before you quit and I'll stop. But let me read a few. This person says, nah, this was amazing. This person says,
blocked.
I'm enjoying it.
Blocked.
This person here says his only bad match was against Rollins at Hell in a Cell, which wasn't his fault. This person here says, you guys seriously aren't going to judge that on the scale of an actual match, right? It was
never
supposed to be a match. It was an angle to develop his character and set up a match with Bray.
I don't want to watch angle to set up characters. I want to watch fucking wrestling matches.
I loved it, this person said. This person says, I know your shtick is to crap on WWE, but this match was incredible storytelling.
I quit. Stop, Brian. I can't do it. All right, listen. I can't deal. I don't want to be involved in this, okay? All right?
I got through like 5%.
So I wasn't even getting to the wrestling match part of this yet. They do this video. Like I say, it's like an hour. And then they go back to the arena. And there's like 8,000 people in this building. I don't know how many were in this crowd. Thousands and thousands of people are there. And if there's 8,000 people there, 7,999 of them are stone silent. But there is one guy, one brave soul, at the top of his lungs, shouting off from the rafters, Michael Cole sucks! Michael Cole sucks!
Hey.
That was the highlight of the match.
Well, maybe the guy was listening on commentary when Bray Wyatt pulled out the big fucking giant-ass hammer, and Michael Cole had never seen the fucking hammer before, even though a month ago he called the match with the giant fucking hammer. Yeah.
So the match begins. It's dead quiet because The Miz is the shittiest babyface in the world.
We're actually going over the match?
Because what you neglected, Ryan, is that as terrible as The Miz's knees and kicks were, light years better than his grappling.
Well,
I'm watching Michael Mizanin try to do groundwork and small joint manipulation. Fuck you and fuck off with that.
He did the Pentagon arm breaker.
I'm not even Pentagon and I'm pissed off. He's so bad at it, man. He's so bad. So here I simply wrote, this match is shit. This match is total shit. and Bray just hits his move and wins, and there is more shit. The Fiend appears on the screen.
That's a hell of a review.
The Fiend appears on the screen. This inspires Bray. I don't fucking know. He goes out and grabs the big cartoony mallet. There's a bunch of sound effects, which I don't know what's supposed to indicate, but Daniel Bryan with his new American Dragon haircut is in the ring. He's got a maroon sweatshirt on with the hood up so you can't see his head. He does the Daniel Bryan knee strike. And Michael Cole, who I'm supposed to believe is an actual functioning human being and not just a robot with a string you pull, says, "Could it be?" I fucking hate the show, Brian.
It's really
He's bad. Such a fucking dipshit. And then, yes, Daniel Bryan. The whole thing with Bray Wyatt is he put on his mask. He feels no pain. Seth tried to kill him and couldn't get it done. And he no-sold everything the Miz did here. But Daniel Bryan returns and just eviscerates him. Just rends him to nothingness. He's going to kill him with a giant hammer. The lights go out. They come back on. He is gone. I hated this. Just hated this.
It was bad.
51. Anyway, Kingston Kopi against Dolph Ziggler.
Excuse me.
No, Vinny. Let her go.
What's the matter with Kopi?
That's not his
There's
name.
There's nothing wrong with Kingston Kopi. All right.
What is wrong then?
Kofi with an F.
Oh, I got a pee on here, so anyway.
Don't pee on it, Gray.
Okay. Elbow on Dolph's face while
I will not laugh at anything.
Dolph dominating. Loads kicks bad for Kopoom. Looks bad for Kopi. Wait, is it again? Boom drags on Dolph. Kopi walking on the rope, up on the rope, both fighting. Dolph falls down hard. 2.5 count on Dolph. Top rope jumps on Dolph outside the ring, and Kopi wins with outside help. I gave that a 6.
I presume you didn't rewrite these notes.
No, I didn't.
Okay. Okay.
That's why I like to do this, because I get it all screwed up and I'm happy.
Well, hey.
Not
hey.
As happy as I am.
Vinny's sweating and crying right now.
I'm dead. I'm deceased.
You look like Shane McMahon.
That's why I hate wrestling so much, so I like to screw it up whenever I can. Okay, then
mission accomplished, Vinny.
Then there was the Battle Royal, The Miz versus Samoa Joe, and I don't like Samoa Joe, so I skipped that one.
Wow.
What do you give it?
That's go-away heat.
I'll give that a 1.
Wow.
Okay, wow. Then here's the one I was waiting for. Undertaker versus Goldberg. And I like that bong bong entrance. And Goldberg hit the corner post and got himself a bloody head.
Yeah, can you get closer to the mic?
Arm twist by Undertaker. Undertaker walks on the rope. Notice how nice I wrote this one.
It's Undertaker.
It is actually much better.
Extra effort.
Yeah.
A stroke out on Goldberg. Goldberg worked a jackhammer.
Go back, Gray. Go back. A what now on Goldberg?
A snake out.
A snake out?
I don't know if that's better or worse. I thought you said stroke out before, but...
Okay, then there was a jackhammer, but not quite.
Great. That is exactly right.
That is entirely accurate. That is the most accurate description of that spot I've heard anyone say anywhere on the internet.
Every part of my body hurts.
I even got myself laughing.
Oh, my God.
Okay. It was a short match, I suppose, because the guys are getting pretty old, huh?
Well.
So, Undertaker wins. I gave that a 10.
Oh, wow.
You are the one.
The Undertaker curve she just graded on.
When Dick wrestled Ricky Dozan, it was the highest rated, most watched not highest rated, but the most watched television show in the history of the country in 1963 when they did it. And the Olympics did beat it when they were in Tokyo. But It was literally 20 years later before they had anything back in that level. And now, you know, it's probably, you know, maybe top 10. There's been giant national team. Japan's very, very Japanese national sports teams, whether it's soccer or baseball, are really big. So some of those games actually, you know, did in the same ballpark later. So you know, it would be, you know, we don't have that in our country because we have the Super Bowl. We don't have our World Cup. You know, isn't like in other countries where if the national team's in the World Cup, like if it was Mexico or England or Germany or something, where everyone's going to watch. You know, we just don't have that type of a thing here.
Yeah, no.
Those numbers, when you look back on them, are just ridiculous.
Yeah,
it's almost like it shouldn't be. It couldn't be, but it's just numbers that have held up for so many years as, you know, far and away the best on TV. I don't know. I wonder how important the mask was in the Japanese culture and comparing it to the U.S. because...
Well, I think it's definitely a huge part of the story. I don't think Dick Beyer without the mask is doing anything like that. I don't think so.
Oh, I totally agree about that, but... Think of the importance of the mask in his career, the turnaround in his career, but think of his ability to do something that would be absolutely impossible in the last couple of decades, and that's protecting the identity.
Protecting the identity, but here's the other one too, is, and in a way, I feel that in hindsight, the short-sightedness of this is unbelievable, but... there's a real famous story when he was in Los Angeles. I don't know what 60, you know, when, who knows, 64-ish. The story when you know, they asked him to lose the mask, and he basically double-crossed the promotion and got out of town.
Walked out.
Yeah.
It just shows that he knew at the time that his identity had changed, and he wasn't willing to give that up for a 2-year run because he had the foresight to see that this thing could last beyond that. And he had all the other territories and he had Japan to go back to, but he was so into protecting the identity. I would like to just maybe go down a little bit different path and talk about that. And I know that the mask was the first thing that resonated with me because I can remember almost immediately I would get a paper bag and I would put the paper bag over my head and my mom would find where the eyes, nose, and mouth holes would be. And then we would cut those out and I would take a red crayon and I would make the red piping around the holes in the mask, trying to make my own destroyer mask. My mom saw that, and then she eventually, within a few months, actually sewed me a white mask with the red piping on it that she had from material. And I can tell you that I, at 7 years old, would wear that mask around the neighborhood.
Wow!
This is a good creepy story for everybody.
Yeah.
And if you were a kid in Whittier, California, in 62, 63, there's a good chance I tried to put the figure four leg lock on you.
That's so funny because Fumi, when he was growing up, he's a couple years younger than you, but Destroyer was big on television when he's 7 years old. And he's talking about how in the schoolyard, I mean, everybody, you know, learned that figure four leg lock.
It was a natural. I'd try it on my cousins, you know, because you had to work it out because you'd watch it on TV, but we didn't have a VCR. You didn't know. And I hadn't at that point seen Buddy Rogers use the move this was the first time that I had seen it. So now I have to try and recreate it. So you would watch it intently as he would apply it. And if you look back on those matches, so much of the drama involved in his match was the build to the figure four. Very smart in the way that he would work on an opponent's knees and legs. He would stake the leg across the rope. He would cannonball down. He would work and weaken the knee. And depending on the opponent, once he goes to put that figure four on, there's either going to be a kickoff where he's not allowed to totally apply it, or the drama of him cinching it in, and then they milked it because he had the $1,000 prize for breaking the figure four. If you had that heel, like maybe a Bob Ellis, I'm just thinking at the time, who was one of his rivals, he would break the hold, but then the Destroyer would say he would add the asterisk on the end. The figure four leg lock was not properly applied. So they had it out for that, which again just added another level of intrigue. And as far as protecting the identity, I just have to tell what I think is arguably the best wrestling fan story. And I know you know this story, Dave, because it's one of my go-tos. You had no internet. You had magazines. The magazines occasionally would have information on who a wrestler was, but that was usually only if they were unmasked. You might see something in results where in parentheses it would have the name of a previous identity that they had. But nobody really knew who the Destroyer was when he arrived. There was a fan in San Bernardino, California, who later would become a referee on the Southern California circuit, Art Williams. His real name is Art Copeman. And in San Bernardino, California, he watched the Destroyer pull into the parking lot one night prior to an event in San Bernardino. And he was smart enough to see that the Destroyer, when he arrived, his car had a New York State license plate. And he jotted down the license plate number. He went home. He got a self-addressed stamped envelope for himself. He put it in an envelope and he mailed it to the New York State DMV, the Department of Motor Vehicles. And he asked the Department of Motor Vehicles to tell him who that license plate was registered to.
And they told him.
Can you imagine? Two weeks later, here's the self-addressed stamped envelope pops up in his mailbox, and it's got Dick Beyer and it's got his address.
Wow.
And Art goes to the matches in San Bernardino, and he walks up to the Destroyer and he shows him the paperwork. And the Destroyer just looks at him and he just, "You got me."
And they became friends.
What can I do? Look, it was probably the Destroyer right off the bat saying, "I got to make this guy my friend."
29. Scott D'Amore, I'm thinking this is about when she first started in Impact. And everybody, I remember she did that first pay-per-view match where she just looked great. And I remember writing like, "God damn, she wrestles like a male Japanese wrestler." And she does. I mean, she wrestles like she was training in the freaking New Japan Dojo. And it's one of their best workers. That's how good she is. And Scott D'Amore said, in a year, Tessa Blanchard would be the best worker, male or female, in the entire business. And I won't go so far as to say that, but she is freaking... I don't even know if she's the best woman wrestler, but she's one of the best, for sure. She's the best, let's see.
Is there an animal running around your office, by the way?
Yes, there is.
Okay, just check. Go ahead.
Yeah, he's chewing food supplements, believe it or not.
All right.
Yeah, he like got him from the... I don't know where he got him from, but he's got him.
All right, so anyway, Tessa.
She's freaking awesome. 28.
Chuck Palumbo cuts a developmental caliber promo.
No.
An audition caliber promo.
Not even like... He was floundering. He was lost. He's out there trying to be Lex Luger. Like, Mr. Perfect is fucking Mr. Perfect.
He's perfect.
Lex Luger is Lex Luger. The 2000 Lex Luger.
Yes.
This guy is sinking like a fucking ship taken on water, and Luger runs down to attack him, and this was the debut of that goddamn muscle flexor. Remember that stupid thing?
Yes.
The muscle thing that you bend?
They use it here. Yeah, the bendy bit. Yeah.
God damn it. I think they use this for like years afterwards.
I'm sure they did.
And then Liz gets kidnapped somewhere in here.
Yeah, Lex unkidnapped Liz at the pay-per-view. Now she's kidnapped again. R&B Security.
Russo and Bischoff.
Yeah. Their job...
I cracked the code.
Their job, these 8 grown men as security, is to kidnap somebody and take her to the back. So they did. Lex attacks them, but Chuck hits him in the head with a flexi bar bendy thing. And Liz is taken away. We're going to commercial. We came back. Remember when Ric Flair got hit, a stone broken over his head, and he was fine?
Yes.
10 minutes later, Lex is in the head. He's dead.
Well, you know, the stone was made of sugar, Vinny. I thought I made that clear. It was fake.
Clearly.
This was a real muscle bender.
Yeah. So Lex is loaded into the ambulance and taken away to die.
I think it's called an exercise bar, by the way.
It's called a muscle flexor.
All right.
I'm going to look it up on Amazon?
No, I really don't.
Bendy muscle thing.
You didn't have that. Never mind.
Yeah, look at that.
Yeah?
The stick. I don't think this is what we're talking about.
Well, I don't know. Could be bendy.
I'm waiting for more. I want to see where this goes.
Muscle bendy bar. That was it called. Bending bar workouts.
Yeah, what's it called?
Yes, Rob.
I believe it's called Vaney Victor, isn't it?
Oh, get out of here. Who let him talk? Go ahead, Vinny.
Literally have control of the board.
So Russo kicks a bunch of dudes out of his office.
Oh, here we go. Python Power Twister. That's a good name.
For a dildo?
I beg your pardon.
That's what it's called.
That sounds much more like what Vaney Victor actually is.
Python Power Twister.
Do not show me that GIF.
The Python Power Twister is a torsion spring exercise device.
Yes.
I'll bet it is.
Yeah. How long is it?
I'm sure there are multiple lengths. Yeah.
Oh, dear God.
Okay.
You asked for it, Vinny.
I did.
I would have just moved on, but you had to ask for it.
This is your fault. Blood's on your hands.
My bad. Russo kicks a bunch of dudes out of his office, including, I think, was Crowbar in there?
It's only $40, by the way.
27.
Last episode, we talked about the terrible Michael Buffer knockoff ring announcer. You remember the guy. He was a wannabe Mississippi Michael Buffer who rednecked up a good ring introduction, you know, somebody's going to get their ass whooped in here. And that's a straight quote. Believe it or not, I am factually stating the ring announcer for this show is Steve Rossi. Now, he's not part of the famous Rossi wrestling family that I know of. He's some sort of comedian or something. He was even worse. In fact, he was far, far worse. He was a very verbose ring announcer. He would talk over the ring entrances, every single one of them. We'll talk more about him. This was a Bush League promotion with inside jokes, and you can tell it's amateur hour, the whole deal. Steve Rossi, the ring announcer, looks like some sort of vaudeville gangster, caricature or something. Dr. Herb Abrams, as he's announced, and I'm sure that is an inside rib on the amount of drugs that Herb Abrams uses, was announced as Yellow Bird, and everybody laughed. You know, I guess he was, because he was wearing a bright yellow blazer, everybody thought this was funny. Nobody cared. Ha ha. All right, so in between, there were absolutely no promos to speak of. Yes, some people talked on the mic for a second or so, but nothing of really any note. So we go basically from match to match for the most part. But between this one, Dan Spivey grabs Herb Abrams. Herb's getting involved in between every match. He's like Super Mark. He's shaking hands with everybody that comes out, heels and baby faces. He's patting them on the back. He's running around in his bright yellow jacket, just trying to be involved. They've got Blackjack Mulligan there as a commissioner, which makes sense. It's the Blackjack Brawl. It's in Las Vegas. We've got a wrestler that exists named Blackjack Mulligan. Well, sure, let's bring him in as a authority figure. He never really did nothing, but he was there. Herb is just out of control. The match was painfully average, and everything else was just painful. So they're coming down the aisle, and Steve Rossi, who's your ring? Okay, Steve Rossi, by the way, got to talk a little bit about him here for a moment. This, I said he was a terrible ring announcer. Let me demonstrate. Okay, this is basically every ring entrance. Okay, so we go back and match number one. This is essentially how it goes. Coming down the aisle from wherever he's from, it's Johnny Ace. Hey, everybody, give Johnny Ace a round of applause. Hey, Las Vegas, that's Johnny Ace, and he's coming down the ringside right now. Johnny Ace. Hey, Johnny, it's Johnny Ace. And his opponent from Florida or some such place, standing really tall, it's Dan Spivey. Let's give a big round of applause for Dan Spivey. Look at that big fellow. That's a big fellow, that Dan Spivey, coming down to the ring. It's Dan Spivey, big old guy. Well, these are going to be two big fellows busting it out here in Las Vegas, Nevada. You know, it's that. It's annoying, utterly annoying. You just want to reach through the screen and slap his comic book fedora off his head, poke him in both his sunglasses protected eyes, I wonder why, and pull his comedic little suit and throw him down to the ground. He's that guy. So that's what you've got all throughout these matches so far. So he says, coming down the aisle, you'll have to look really close. You dipshit. Basically, if this is mini Giant Baba versus mini Ricky Steamboat, is basically what it is. And again, it's played largely straight. John Tolos also had some winners on commentary. He says, hey, they call him the Karate Kid because he's into karate. John Tolos also said, did you see the Karate Kid movie? It's pretty good. John Tolos also said, maybe there'll be a mini Missy Hyatt come running down the aisle. And at that point, I'm like, what? But like, what? I pulled up Wrestling Observer Newsletter, July the 23rd, 1996. Yes, 2 years later. Why would I pull up this issue, you ask? Well, the reason is, it is the obituary of one Herb Abrams from Wrestling Observer Newsletter. Dave Meltzer says, eccentric, sometimes wrestling promoter Herb Abrams passed away on the morning of July 23rd, 1996 from cardiac failure in what was reported by the New York Post as an apparent drug overdose. Abrams, who was 41 years old at the time, stopped breathing after being handcuffed by police in his office at 7 Penn Plaza in Manhattan after he was going on a spree bashing up furniture on several floors of the building with a baseball bat and pulling fire alarms about 6 a.m. Oh. Just to make sure we didn't miss any details there. He was handcuffed by police at his office in Manhattan after going on a spree bashing up furniture on several floors of the building with a baseball bat and pulling fire alarms at 6 a.m. in the morning. He was taken to St. Vincent's Hospital and was declared dead about 7:30 a.m. Police were called about an emotionally disturbed person and arrived at 6:10 a.m. They found Abrams naked, covered with baby oil, with two women in his office. Abrams, who started a wrestling promotion called the Universal Wrestling Federation in 1989, was the lowest level of the food chain of wrestling promoters, with his reputation for stiffing wrestlers and others when it came to paying bills on his shows. He had prior arrests in several states, among them California, North Dakota, Colorado, Florida, and South Carolina, largely for skipping towns after shows without paying bills. Herb Abrams had also been arrested twice in recent months on drug possession, trespassing, and for attempting to attack and molest a woman in his Manhattan office. His most recent foray in wrestling was a live cable special on Sports Channel America called The Blackjack Brawl on September 25th, 1994, from Las Vegas, which was headlined by Steve Williams versus Sid Vicious, and using major names such as Dan Spivey, Johnny Ace, Missy Hyatt, Bob Orton, Tony Helm, Cactus Jack, and Jimmy Snuka. The event, which drew just 228 paid in a 17,000-seat arena, despite Abrams pulling a coup and getting Williams on the Jay Leno show to plug the event, was so bad on so many levels that despite a tiny viewing audience, was voted the worst major wrestling card in the Observer poll for that year. He had reopened his office and was working on sending wrestlers on a tour of Mexico at the time of his death. Police found cocaine and Valium in his system and believed he died of a drug overdose. Police had found Abrams with cocaine in his office in an April arrest when he was allegedly holding a woman hostage and robbing her, and he was charged in that incident with unlawful imprisonment, assault, and attempted rape in a case that was still pending. Abrams was a longtime wrestling fan in New York, dating back to the days of superstar Billy Graham and Bruno Sammartino. He ran a clothing store and burst onto the wrestling scene in 1989 at a John Arezzi fan convention in New York, announcing the formation of his new federation that was going to put WWF out of business. Abrams named a list of wrestlers, many if not most of whom he had never spoken with, that were going to headline for his fledgling group, including Bruiser Brody, who had died 1 year earlier, and saying that his booker would be Blackjack Mulligan, who at the time was in prison for counterfeiting. He claimed to have signed exclusive contracts with many of the top names in All Japan, who at the time weren't working in the U.S., saying he had loaned them to Japan in their time off. Some people even took what he said seriously. However, Abrams did manage to get television on some cable stations and had some major league talent from the start, including Steve Dr. Death Williams, Bam Bam Bigelow, and Paul Orndorff, and even had Bruno Sammartino at one point doing his television commentary. He started stiffing some wrestlers he was mad at on pay almost immediately, among them being the Honky Tonk Man, Louis Spicoli, and Bill Anderson, a practice he had later become known for. He built up for a pay-per-view show on June 9, 1991 at the Manatee Civic Center in Palmetto, Florida, with Williams and Bigelow on top, which drew about 550 fans live, but was far from the worst pay-per-view show in history, even though the buy rate was among the lowest ever. After that time, he disappeared from the scene for a while, then returned to running a few more tapings, disappear, and the trend continued for the past 5 years. To his credit, he pulled off several major coups for a promoter of his level, such as a fair amount of cable penetration at times for his television show, more than other established groups that ran regularly were able to do. He did run a pay-per-view show that wasn't all that bad and was able to con a major casino into co-promoting a television special, which was all bad, in Las Vegas. Thus, the obituary of one Herb Abrams. 26.
All right, then.
Oh, allow me, Vinny, please.
Oh, well, I'll have a lot to say, too, but it is your show, after all.
Chris Champion and Don Valentine. I can't even say his name. I just wanna...
You know what? Don't. Don't say... He doesn't deserve a name.
This guy. So, Champion's out there, and Jim Ross says, Chris Champion has alerted us. He has a very special surprise coming up tonight. I'm like, man, what could this fucking special surprise be? I can't wait. So he gets in there, and he throws a... Okay, so what happens is, he throws a jumping sidekick, and Don Valentine falls down. Now, Don Valentine is running towards the ropes at a certain speed, okay? Chris Champion is expecting him to bounce off the ropes and return towards him at the same speed.
Critical, yes.
Yes. So he has to time his jumping sidekick. So he whips him into the ropes, and he leaps in the air, and he extends his leg, and this fucking Don Valentine, I'm going to say his name, he slows down. And so the kick looks like shit, and Chris Champion falls on his ass. Don Valentine also falls down. So then, Champion is with a chop, and you can see Champion's lips. He very loudly says, "Stand up!" Because he's going to give him another fucking kick. Now, this time, he's not going to throw him off the ropes. He's not going to try to time a jumping kick as a man is running off the ropes. No, he's going to have him stand up, don't fucking move, and I'm going to throw a side kick. and he throws a sidekick, and this asshole fucking backs up. And so Champion whiffs this fucking sidekick. And this time, Don Valentine does not go down. He just fucking backs up and stands there. Champion's like, you son of a bitch. And so now it's time to just finish this, okay? We learn, or at least I learn, what the special surprise that Chris Champion has promised actually is. Chris Champion stands there, and he begins to lift his arms in the air, and he begins to lift one knee up into the air, and he begins standing there on one leg in preparation for the Karate Kid crane kick.
Yes.
Not one announcer has any fucking idea what he's doing. He stands there on one leg. And by the way, I never realized how hard the crane kick was. I never realized how hard it was to stand on one fucking leg. He's on one leg. Keep in mind, fucking, who's the fucking guy that played the Karate Kid? Ralph Macchio. Who's the old guy? What was his name?
Pat Morita.
Pat Morita could fucking stand on a fucking stump sticking out of the fucking water and not fall off, okay? He was an old guy who never even did martial arts. This fucking guy can't even stand in the middle of the ring on one leg. So he's wobbling back and forth. He looks like the fucking windy suspension bridge that I walked over today. He can barely stand. But God damn it, he's going to hit his move. And he leaps in the air and he kicks Don Valentine right in the fucking jaw. Don Valentine falls down to his death. He gets the pin, and you've never seen a man so angry to have won a squash match as Chris Champion. He's furious, and I can't blame him. He made his big comeback, and he could not have looked worse. Like, if the NWA board was thinking, that's Chris Champion, you know what? What the fuck? Let's make him world champion. He's going to beat Flair. He'll have for 25 days, and Luger's going to beat him. And then Starrcade will do Luger and Flair. They'll finally face off for that title, Flair's challenger. If they come up with a fucking idea like that, and then they watch this match, it'd be like, match is canceled. Champion ain't getting the title. He looks like shit. And it wasn't his fault. It was his fault in the sense that he tried too much with this shithead. But it was not all his fault.
The too much that he tried with this shithead was very basic stuff. That if you can't do this, you should not be on television. I watched this entire match from start to finish nonstop. I pressed pause. I sat back and thought for a while. I rewound it. I watched the entire match start to finish, not stop a second time. I just let it all sink in. I went back. I made a series of screenshots and GIFs recapping this. This is a two-minute match that I devoted like an hour of my life to. I cannot believe my eyes. Okay, I know I am prone to hyperbole. And I know I exaggerate sometimes. Okay, listen to me, Brian. Don Valentine is the worst professional wrestler I have ever seen. And I don't limit that to national TV or major shows. I include that to guys who showed up to Tim Flower's school to train for one time and quit halfway through and never returned. I once watched a guy in a conditioning drill. The drill was, do a crisscross. When Tim shouts your name, you drop down. The other guy runs over you, and you get up and you keep on running. And you take turns doing this. I once witnessed, with my own eyes, in the middle of the drill, one of the guys threw on the brakes, threw his hands in the air, walked out of the building, and never returned. Okay, yes. That guy was a better wrestler than Don Valentine. Don Valentine often appears to be a consistent effort to sabotage his own shitty squash match. when he the very first one, the very first thing Champion does is chop him, and Valentine's bump for this chop is to like sit down and then put his hand on the mat, right? So then Champion only did like six things in this entire 2 minutes, but I remember them all vividly because I watched them so much. Champion goes to whip him in for the I think it may have even been supposed to be a sidekick, but because it got fucked up, it was supposed to be a drop kick. But because it got fucked up and Champion was trying to levitate, one foot came down and the other came up. So I watched as Don Valentine was pushed into the ropes. He didn't know how to go backwards in the ropes. He didn't know how to go forwards into the ropes. He certainly didn't know how to come off the ropes. He didn't know how to take the drop kick. So this looks horrible. At this point, the fact somebody once did something very similar to Road Warrior Hawk. They stopped running on a drop kick, so Hawk fell on his ass like a geek. And Hawk beat the fuck out of them. Because that's what you do when they fuck something up and you look bad as a result. You have to make it's your job to make yourself look good and beat the fuck out of them. Champion didn't. Chris Champion must be the most patient man in the world, as this guy repeatedly, over and over, either didn't know how to sell something or just outright refused and made Champion look like the biggest goof over and over and over again. By the end of me sharing my thoughts with the world about how Don Valentine was the worst wrestler I'd ever seen, I provided evidence over and over for how he fucked up everything. Lance Storm, a Canadian man, an entire country known for their patience and kindness, talked about how he didn't understand why Chris Champion wasn't just beating the shit out of this guy. Hurricane Helms, who has been on Lord knows how many shows across the country, across the world, the worst of the worst he's seen, in his rise to the top and his journeys around the world since, he simply said, this was brutal. So by the end, it's 2 minutes in, and I didn't mention the other chop. Don Valentine gets whipped into the ropes, and as he's coming off the ropes, Chris Champion throws a chop at him. Do you remember, Brian, when I first made my attempt to become a pro wrestler, and we would go to that empty warehouse at night in Tacoma with holes in the walls, holes in the brick walls in this warehouse, but goddamn it, there was a ring there. So that's where we would go to train as best I could. And I would get whipped into the ropes, and I come off, and you or Matt Farmer or Nikki Six or whoever was there would throw a chop, and I would fall, my back would go down, but instead of throwing my feet in the air, my feet would just keep running.
I vaguely remember like, this.
Yeah. Okay. That is exactly what Don Valentine did in this. He took a chop like I did when I started.
When you were at your worst.
At my very worst. So the point is, this guy is on TV doing something that I spent 6 months of my life taking chop after chop after chop, getting beaten and beaten and beaten, busting my ass to avoid doing before they would put me in front of a crowd in county fairs with a dozen people watching. Don Valentine's on national goddamn TV taking chops like this. So after 2 minutes of the worst wrestling I have ever, ever, ever seen with my eyeballs, Chris Champion, he has a surprise. He can't not do the crane kick, right? He can't suddenly say, fuck this, I'm just going to small package this guy and go home. He has to deliver the surprise that has been teased. He has to do the crane kick. So he's standing there on one foot, and I can't blame him for wobbling back and forth because he's probably scared shitless about what's going to happen now. And he's thinking, if I don't kick this guy, he probably won't sell this either. So Don Valentine gets up, and he slowly turns around, and Chris Champion has no choice. It's not his fault. He does what he has to do. He kicks this motherfucker right in the fucking jaw. Valentine's head whips back. Oh, he sells this one. He sells this like a gunshot. Chris Champion looks to the announcers. He cannot believe what he has just been through. He makes the cover, and he pins him. I was ruined after this.
Don't blame you.
My life was gone astray. I didn't know what was going on. I did not take a walk, but I had to turn the show off for a while. I could not believe this. Like, I needed a 20-minute break to come back. Now, I'm happy I did because there was more to come, but my God in heaven. Do you realize, Brian, we've been watching, like, some shitty Saturday Night Jobbers for, like, 5 years? Nothing comes close to Don Valentine.
Nope.
Dale LaPerouse, on his worst day, can work circles around Don Valentine. J.C. Wilde, we said some terrible things about you. We apologize. You're much better than Don Valentine.
A new man to set the standard here on this program.
I don't know. We have to stop reviewing the show, Brian. We'll never reach these depths
no.
again.
We thought that about J.C. Wilde, Vinny. The worst could still be yet to come.
No, this was absolute zero. This was it, man.
We'll find out.
The bottom. The bottom of the barrel.
25.
Well, before we go, are you ready for the Jericho Cruise?
I don't got to think about that thing till January, but yeah. We're
You're going thinking to... about it right now. Are you ready to go?
I'm thinking about other things right now. I'm thinking about let's do some questions. Anybody got good questions? But okay, so it's Jericho Cruise. So I think it's mid to late January. I think like 21st to 24th. I mean, my days might be
January 20 through 24, 2020, Miami to Nassau in the Bahamas.
I've never been to Nassau.
Wow,
I've been to Miami, so that's cool.
How about the Nassau Coliseum? You been there?
I think I was there once, yeah. Mm. Yeah, I think I was there once. Well,
you've never been to the Nassau in the Bahamas. It'll be the first time here.
I've never been to the Bahamas.
Do you know there's a steakhouse on this boat, Dave?
There is?
Cagney's Steakhouse.
Really?
That's right. We're going to be eating some steak on this boat.
Mm, God, am I going to get really out of shape again?
Yep.
Not
in 4 days. I mean, if you get out of shape in 4 days, we got to talk.
Oh, you just wait till you see you haven't gotten to my age yet. It's changed, man. It sucks. I mean, I can't say it sucks. It's not that bad, but it sucks because it's like before. I mean, 3 years ago, I could do anything I wanted. I swear to God. I mean, I didn't train hard. I could. I mean, I didn't eat junky, but I never worried about anything that I ate. And now it's just like it's freaking. I gotta be like, oh, it's just so hard.
Well, hey, they got a sushi and sashimi bar there.
Really?
That's right.
I'm getting pretty excited. What else do they got?
They got the Lotus Garden Asian restaurant.
That sounds good.
La Cucina Italian restaurant.
That sounds good.
There's a garden cafe.
So are you bringing anyone or is it just me and you hanging out together?
I have not decided yet.
Okay.
But it'll definitely be you and me hanging out together.
Okay.
We're
not gonna hang out with Bischoff?
I'm trying to avoid that one if possible. But we do have a Wrestling Observer Live podcast every day on the boat. Are you aware of that?
I'm completely aware. I did read the contract.
That's right. They have told us that the internet is going to be good to go to do five live, well, maybe not five. I guess we'll have to figure out how many days we're actually going to do the podcast. But
the 20 to 24 is 5 days.
Several Wrestling Observer Live shows.
Okay, so wait a minute. So how are, okay, the one thing I am skeptical of is how good is the internet going to be in the middle of freaking nowhere?
Well, they told me they've got this ready to go for a live broadcast.
So we're going to go live?
Yeah, that's the idea.
Wow.
Noon Pacific, 3 Eastern every day.
Really?
I mean, plans could change, but one way or the other, we're doing five shows on this boat.
We're going live? Oh, yep. My God. How are we going to get information? Well, I guess because the internet's going to work.
Well, they say there's going to be internet. Otherwise, we'll do five shows of Q&A in front of the live crowd.
Well, we can interview. We're going to have all kinds of people there to interview.
Yep, there's going to be a lot of different guests there on the boat.
So who's on the cruise?
Well, let's see who we've got on this cruise here. As you mentioned, Chris Jericho... He's going to be on
the
cruise.
Obviously, Chris Jericho will be on the
cruise. Yes, he will be there, as well as the guest of honor, the Nature Boy, Ric Flair.
Ric Flair's on the cruise?
That's what it says right here, the guest of honor.
Oh, my God. I'm going to spend a week with Ric Flair?
He is top billing under only Chris Jericho and All Elite Wrestling.
Oh, Jesus Christ. So that's right. All those guys, because I've been talking to guys who want to sign with All Elite just so they can go on the cruise. And that's not, I'm not kidding you about that either.
Uh-huh.
I actually did talk to somebody who went on the cruise last year, who's not going to be able to go on the cruise this year, unless he can sign with All Elite Wrestling.
Well, hey, there you go.
And he told me, he goes, because I go like, did you have a good time? And he goes, oh, the best. because I swear to God, I want to sign with All Elite Wrestling just like going to the cruise next year. That's a true story.
Well,
Jesus Christ, a week with Ric Flair. I haven't done that ever. That's like,
well,
that's I don't want to say it's a scary proposition.
It's an opportunity of a lifetime here, everyone.
Okay, that is all, everyone. Okay, now I'm pretty excited now about this thing because, wow.
Nature Boy Ric Flair, Vicky Guerrero is the guest cruise director. Kevin Nash, Scott Hall.
Hold on. Okay, Vicky Guerrero is going to be Captain Steubing, or it was who's Vicky Guerrero exactly?
She's the guest cruise director.
So is that who's the cruise director on the Love Boat?
You're asking me about the Love Boat?
Yeah, isn't there like the what's her name? I don't remember. I didn't even watch the Love Boat other than. I rarely watched that show. I know it was popular for years and years, but I think it was on like a night that I was watching wrestling every night or something.
Well, that's probably why you don't remember who the guest cruise director was. But on this cruise, it's Vicky Guerrero. Hall, Nash, and X-Pac are going to be there.
Oh, that's cool.
Booker T, Jake the Snake Roberts.
Jake Roberts?
Jake Roberts is going to be on this boat.
Oh, my God.
Luckily, Diamond Dallas Page will also be on this boat.
Oh, hopefully he can keep Jake under control.
Bischoff, Conrad, Chavo. Charmel, MVP, Shaul Guerrero, Lisa Marie Verone. Ted Irvine's going to be there.
Oh, that's his dad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Baby-faced assassin, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
Red Cup Jeff is the head bartender.
Who?
Red Cup Jeff.
I don't know Red Cup Jeff.
Well, you're going to know him because he's going to be on this boat for 5 days.
Yeah, but we're not going to be out there drinking. So.
Oh, you don't know the people are going to buy you drinks, Dave.
I'm not drinking.
That's what you told Wale. Look how that turned out.
That was only one drink. Wow. That's going to be a fun week. I'm not going to be able to do an issue, though. Maybe I can bring a computer.
I'm pretty sure you can bring a computer on this boat. Well, deposits as low as $200, and I'm looking at the rooms right now, and there's a lot of them sold out.
90% sold out was the last number.
90% sold out, everybody. So if you want to join us on this cruise, I mean... It's almost done. You've only got a few opportunities here to get a room. So,
yeah,
ChrisJerichoCruise.com is the place to go.
Wow, that's actually going to be a really fun week. I'm going to
be awesome.
I'm going to go to Japan like 3 weeks earlier too.
I know you're out of your mind.
Two Tokyo domes and then a freaking cruise. Well,
look at you living the life.
I know, no kidding. Isn't that awesome? It's yeah. Like after all these years of never taking a vacation, I'm going
to
be...
Now
like,
we can't get you to stay at home.
Yeah, I know. Good. Well, actually, it's not that good. I actually have fun at home.
Join us on this cruise, everybody. As noted, literally every single person we've talked to that went last year said it was awesome.
Everyone said it was awesome, and they did not spend a week with Ric Flair.
No. So think about that.
Yeah, everyone... Oh, my God. I was just texting with Ric Flair the other... Like, this morning... I think it was this morning. And trying to see if, like... I haven't seen him in a long, long time. Like, when's he coming to California? And it's like, I didn't realize I'm spending a freaking week...
You're going to go see him.
I'm going to see him for a week. Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if he's... I shouldn't say that, but... Is he drinking or no? Because he said he was never going to drink again after...
Well, I hope not, but I've seen some videos lately, and... It's hard to say.
Okay.
I hope not.
I hope not, too.
I hope not.
God, the guy's...
Hey, listen, if you're not a drinker, there's a lot of fun stuff to do on this boat. You don't have to be a heavy drinker to enjoy yourself on this cruise.
So it sounds like the food's good, right?
Oh, there's going to be a lot of great food. All sorts of great restaurants on this boat.
That's awesome. I'm like, so excited now.
See, look at that.
I'm so excited now about this trip. I cannot.
Have been excited when we signed that contract.
Well, at the time, I was thinking, like, I'm going to the freaking Tokyo Dome. I'm coming back.
You were worried about all sorts of different things.
I was worried about the internet. I was just worried about life. But now, you know what? I'm just excited.
24.
Now, the important one here, the really important one. Dan Whitler asks, aren't boneless buffalo wings just chicken nuggets? Yes.
Yes.
There is no such thing as a boneless wing.
No, there is such a thing as a boneless wing, Vinny, but there shouldn't be.
No.
That's stupid.
No, people who call their processed chicken meat this are lying to you, the consumer.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you know, people, you know.
If you want to buy chicken nuggets, great. Enjoy your chicken nuggets. That's fine.
So what do they call it? A boneless wing?
Yes.
Well, I mean, you could get a boneless chicken breast.
Yeah.
You think a chicken breast has no bones in it?
No.
It's a boneless chicken breast, is a boneless wing.
But when you buy a boneless wing, they don't take a chicken wing and take the bone out and give you the meat.
How do you know that?
Because I've
eaten
them.
You ever made a boneless wing?
No, but I've eaten them.
Okay.
I said, hey.
I think maybe they do that.
I said, hey, this is a chicken nugget.
Well, maybe.
And I never ate them again, because I like wings.
Somebody, I'm sure, is going to alert us tomorrow that, in fact, a boneless wing is a wing with no bones
in
it.
No one will inform you that.
All right, we'll find out. We'll find out.
Anyway, Dan,
I also agree that a boneless wing is not a wing. But, I mean, there is a boneless chicken breast, so a boneless wing could just be a boneless wing. That's like a chicken nugget.
Yeah, but you ordered a boneless breast, Brian, and they handed you a chicken patty.
That's what a boneless breast is.
Boy, this is fun.
It's a giant chicken McNugget.
No, it's not at
actually,
all.
Actually, it is. No. Oh, the word nugget, there's like a... If I go to nugget in the dictionary, it's going to say must be less than 3 inches in length. Otherwise, it's not considered a nugget.
You get a breaded fried chicken filet. That's one thing.
Oh, so that's a giant nugget?
No.
It's got breading on it?
No, a nugget is where they take the meat and chop it all up and process it and put it back together.
Yeah, it's like a big chicken breast.
No, a breast is a hunk of actual animal meat.
Not if you ever gone to the 99-cent chicken sandwich at McDonald's?
I don't care.
You told us to answer the question, Granny, so would you shut up when we answer the question?
I didn't say take 10 minutes to talk about chicken wings.
I can't believe it. Can you believe she did that, Vinny?
Yes.
She guilted us in answering the question, then she yelled at us because of it.
Well, you don't have to take
a 99-cent McDonald's chicken sandwich is a chicken nugget, a giant chicken nugget
yes, it
between
is.
Two buns.
It is.
Thank you.
23. Women's Royal Rumble, Lacey Evans is number one.
Yes.
And she comes out to do
Dude,
a promo.
I'm waiting for Mark's defense of this one here. Dude.
Why am I going to defend it?
Well, I mean,
you're supposed to be defending things on this
you're
show.
You're playing devil's advocate on this
fucking
show.
I am. I'm trying to get on your nerves, really.
Lacey Evans. Dude.
So.
Do they realize that number one and two wrestle by themselves for 2 minutes? Are they aware of that when they put this fucking thing together?
I don't know.
God bless Lacey Evans. She is green as grass.
I felt bad for her.
She comes
it's
out.
It's not her fault. They put her out there before she's ready.
Not only that, like, we've seen a few vignettes. But, like, if you've never really seen Lacey Evans before, like, what in the fuck is her gimmick? We've talked about this a million times. She was a Marine,
mm-hmm.
but she's a Southern Belle.
Yes.
Who's also a 50s pinup girl.
Right.
Who also is like a boxer.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
What?
Three of those things go together. Three of them do.
She comes out and she's got her little
it's not
hat
the boxer.
On.
Little hat.
That hat was big.
Her hat. Her
you
hat
could
needs
put
a
cereal
check.
In that hat and eat the cereal out of the hat.
It was half the size of the building. So she gets in the ring and she does this promo. And, like, everyone's baffled.
Is she from the South?
I think.
Because that accent sounded...
She had the worst Southern drawl.
It was really suspect.
So,
hello, WWE Universe. I'm Lacey Evans. It wasn't great.
She's number
one. There's an hour to go.
Are you talking to me again?
Yeah. Do you watch Raw and SmackDown?
Barely.
Pay-per-views here and there?
I watch the pay-per-views, yes.
Okay, so when they do a beating on some guy,
mm-hmm.
and the camera starts going,
yeah.
and shaking around.
Snap zooms, yeah.
What do you think about that?
I think that...
I vomit.
So, I guess they started doing that. That was like a kind of thing that started in ECW, I would say, right?
Like, not like this.
No.
I'm saying like
used.
Originally, like, you know,
well,
snap zooms
I mean,
and
yeah,
that kind of
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah.
And like... They do it on like they do it a lot on TV shows now. Like I can think of The Office as one TV show.
That's
where
when the camera's like not steady.
They do yeah, and then they do like snap zooms on things. The way the WWE
but do they go in and out like this?
The way the WWE does it is it's fucking extreme.
Okay,
it's,
thank you.
It's insane.
Thank you.
Like you don't need to be snapping back and forth, back and forth, back and
no.
forth. Like I know it's supposed to make it seem more
insane,
action packed, and whatever. And like, if you're fucking with the cameras and you're cutting, you're not gonna see as much of the fucking up
yes.
that happens, especially in a match like a Royal Rumble where there's just a mass of people
yes.
and everything's getting fucked up. But there's a point that it gets to where you're just like, all right, man, Kevin Dunn, like tell him to fucking chill out.
Yes,
like. Tell him to stop doing that, Kevin.
That's terrible.
I don't care. I don't give a fuck about you, Kevin Dunn. Come get me, motherfucker.
Wow. You just called out Kevin Dunn.
Yeah, come to my house. I don't give a fuck about
you. I got a class
you.
I teach Wednesday and Friday for some little bit of self-defense.
I got a knife in my pocket for self-defense.
Oh, there we go.
The Gary Hart method. Zelina Vega at this point says, amidst all this havoc and chaos, I'm a hide under the ring.
Yeah.
But she sucks at it. So she hides. No one can see her. She's hidden. But she's lifting up the apron, looking around.
Yes, she's
tackling.
She's a scamp. She's being mischievous.
She's definitely being mischievous.
Here I am. Does anyone remember I'm under the ring? Ooh. And then somebody gets eliminated in the air, and she's like, ooh, you got eliminated. Now I'm going to go back under.
This is a poor job of hiding.
That's fun. She's having
perfect
fun.
Perfect description.
She's having, you know.
That's exactly what happened.
That is what happened.
She's having a blast.
22.
I did just watch Gary Hart do a promo on Dr. Death saying, who'd you ever kill? Never heard that one before.
I never heard that. Wow.
Not who'd you ever beat. Who'd you ever kill, Dr. Death?
Yeah,
anyway.
I never heard that.
Roman comes out, says, don't you ever run your mouth about my wife and kids. He beats the hell out of the guy, smashing him all over. The place is chanting for Roman. Then Drew gives him a low blow, hits him with a Claymore kick, lays him out. So another match confirmed for WrestleMania.
That reminds me, since you brought up Death. Okay, so I'm reading, I actually mentioned this. I'm reading this book by Bugsy McGraw, who was a wrestler in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. And he wrestled under a bunch of different names. But he was in San Francisco during this is what he said in his book, okay? He was in San Francisco, and he was in San Francisco, and we had, you ever heard the Zodiac Killer? You probably have.
Oh, yeah.
It's actually really famous. Okay.
Yeah.
So this was actually when I was in like elementary school, but, you know, he became, you know, famous for years and years and years. So we had the Zodiac Killer, and people were actually genuinely scared of this guy.
They should have been.
Yeah. Well, he killed, you know, I don't know how many people he actually killed. He claimed that he killed like dozens of people, and I think that they may have had like, I don't remember.
He claimed 37.
Yeah, and I think that they really attributed to maybe 10, but maybe there was more. But anyway, so Moondog Maine had some strategy that him and Bugsy McGraw, well, he was the Brute then, they were going to go, they kind of knew where the guy lived, and somehow they were going to snake him out and beat the shit out of him. And their strategy didn't work, but they went like, they went to like the part of San Francisco where they believed that he lived, and I mean he actually describes it all, and it's like the weirdest thing. Like, yeah, you know, it's like, and he's like going like, what are we doing? Whereas Moondog Maine is just like, you know, you got to remember that some of these wrestlers from that era, because they believed it so much, like some of those guys were like completely fearless to the point if they were insane because they were fearless. But yeah, they were trying to like goad this guy out, like, somehow. I don't remember what strategy was, but I just read this yesterday, so it just popped into my head.
So after all these years, we could have found the Zodiac Killer by just asking Bugsy McGraw?
They didn't. It didn't work. He tried. They tried. It didn't.
But, I mean, it seems that his indication was they knew who this guy was.
No, they didn't know who he was. No. No, but they knew where he lived, and somehow, so they drove there, and they figured,
they knew where his house was?
No, but they knew the section of San Francisco. So they went to the section of San Francisco. And I don't know how they were planning on goading him out. That was like Moondog Maine's plan, you know what I mean? And I don't, you know, he didn't really go into, I didn't read it close enough to see like what the detail was. From the little bit I read, it felt like Moondog did not have a great plan past going to a certain district, going to the Fillmore.
I find that hard to believe.
Yeah, going to the Fillmore district, and then somehow they were going to goad him out because it's Moondog Maine and the Brute looking for him, you know, like that he would come out because they're looking for him. And then they'd, yeah, beat the shit out of him and bring him to the police, and they would end this fear in the city. They didn't do that, though.
Sounds like he needs to go to the cops now. Might have some information.
He isn't. I don't think so. I think the guy's dead by now. I'm pretty sure the guy who they thought did it, I'm pretty sure died.
Hmm. I mean,
Moondog died.
Moondog's
years ago.
Died, but I mean, Bugsy's still around. He's got
Bugsy's
some
still
information.
Around. Yeah, he just wrote a book.
Yeah, he's got a. I think he should talk to the cops about this.
He didn't have any good clues in the book about the Zodiac Killer.
Man.
He had some good stories, but not about the Zodiac Killer.
Hmm.
Oh, by the way, before, just remind me. So I read the passage in Bugsy McGraw's book.
Okay. Talking about last night.
Talking about last night, right. So him and Moondog Maine, so they just went out and they were drunk and they had no battle plan. They just wanted to somehow, they figured if they went out and looked vulnerable. Now, how two 300-pound guys are going to look vulnerable that are on TV every week doing pro wrestling and main events or going to look anonymous, I don't know. But it's Lonnie Maine's idea. And, you know, he was drinking heavily when they formulated this plan.
This is the Zodiac?
Yeah, they were trying to snuff out the Zodiac Killer. They're trying to like lure him out of wherever he was. They, I guess, thought he was in the Fillmore District. So they went hanging around the Fillmore District trying to find a guy looking to kill him that they were going to beat up and then bring the police and save the city.
How do you identify the Zodiac Killer?
I have no idea. I don't know that again.
You have a better chance at beating up someone who's innocent than finding the Zodiac Killer, I would
think so. Yeah. So... Yeah, not all plans from Lonnie Maine were probably like came to fruition or very logically thought out. But yeah, that was the idea. 21.
No Craig here today. He's sick. He'll be back next week, presumably. And until then, just got to talk about these shows. What a night for him to miss. They were fine.
They were one. One was good, one was boring, but neither was noteworthy.
Nothing terrible.
No.
Nothing so wretched. Say,
how's it going, everybody?
How's it going, everybody?
Say, it's Paisley on Wrestling Observer Live.
It's Paisley on Observer Live.
Wow, you're so taking over good your at job. This podcast. What did you do at gymnastics today?
I did monkey jumps.
You did monkey jumps at gymnastics?
Yeah.
And who's doing a podcast with us? Who's that over there?
Giraffe.
Yeah. Is Giraffe Daddy's friend?
Is Daddy's friend.
Yeah. Where does he live? In Daddy's room?
In Daddy's room.
Yeah. Is he allowed to go in Baby's room?
No. He stays in Daddy's.
Yes, he stays in Daddy's room.
He stays in Daddy's bedroom.
Yeah. What is he doing here?
I love you, Quinn.
I love you, Quinn. What is he doing here?
He talks about service.
He talks about observers?
Says.
Wow. Does he do a podcast?
He does the podcast.
Yeah.
With Daddy.
With Daddy. He's a good podcast friend, right?
He's the giraffe.
He is a giraffe, yes. Anything you want to say to Mummy?
Those cameras are over there.
The cameras are over there. Who fixed the cameras?
Tony did.
Tony fixed them, right? Anything else you want to say about the room?
Okay.
Okay, say bye-bye, everybody.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Talk to you again after a while.
After a while. You want to do it again?
Want to do it again? You know how many times?
I can do a better take, Dad.
You know how many times we did that yesterday? I don't know why that played, but I just let it go.
Well, yeah. Like you say, she's taking my job.
She's going to take everybody's job right there.
Yeah.
Two. She's still two.
Yeah, I'm screwed.
You're in big trouble, dude.
Just done.
We're going to get Granny on the line, but I got something I want to do here because this was also very popular. A couple of days ago when the music stopped playing, a podcast I did with Paisley accidentally played.
Yes.
So I just let it go through.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody loved it.
All
okay.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So I got a new one I'm going to play here today. I'm going to tell you everybody what it is first, then I'm going to play it because it's a little long. All right.
All right.
So every night we read her books.
Good.
Okay.
Good.
And I'm sure many of you, probably most of you because the book is so old, have heard The Little Fur Family.
Okay.
This book is such an awesome book. Although, the pictures are horrifying. I have no idea how it doesn't scare
Paisley. Now I have to look this up.
Yeah. The Little Fur Family, I believe they're bears, okay?
1946. Yeah.
But the little fur father looks like Sasquatch. He's a big, formless, hairy creep.
Yeah, looks more like an ape.
It's terrifying. But she loves Little Fur Family. So we read Little Fur Family to her every night. So one day, I don't even know how we did this, but I said, or Whitney said or whoever, they were like, what does this page say? And she started reading it, okay?
Oh, yeah.
Now, she can't read. She's two. Mm-hmm. But she's heard this story so many times that she has memorized The Little Fur Family.
Oh, good.
So if you're a parent out there who happens to have the book, The Little Fur Family, you, right now, can read along with Paisley. I believe I give her a total of two prompts, but she is going to read to everybody The Little Fur Family. Here we go. Okay, Paisley, tell me Little Fur Family. There was a little fur family.
Well, Mr. was smaller than most, and little fur coats, and landed on a old wooden tree.
This is my little fur father.
Said, good morning, Wally. He put it on his hat and ran away out into his little world. The little fur mother buried to a fur child and love you in the plane of where you already lived. It was wild, while you flowers go over the ground, while you winds put to the air, while your nuts fall from the wild nut trees, and while you cross to go to for child's nose, to go to his nose, and it is a sneeze. Achoo! The sneeze woke up his grandpa, or let in house dump. And Grim back and rock and dump, dump, dump. Walked back into his house and said, bless your mother, little grandson, every time you sneeze. Achoo! Bless you, said the little child. Thank you, said his grandpa. And her grandpa went dump, dump. Walked back into his house dump. And the little fur child went on to the tuckins on the horse, taking to the little river for a fish. The fish didn't have any food, and they didn't have any feet. They also went around on the river. The little fur child watched them for a long time. He reached in the river and put out a fish and looked at it, and then go-plunk. He threw it back in the river. He wished it in the air and come from and caught a fire and broke. Bug in the air and then sat and looked at it. The bug didn't have any food. It was shining off his little wings and zip. He threw it back in the air. And he caught a little tiny, tiny foot emerald. The little dust for emerald. And how warm so careful. Even the little for nose. So he kissed the right on his little for nose. And put the joy in the wheel. Again in grass. And the little tiny, tiny foot emerald went down the hall into the ground. The sun went down around the river. The sky grew old and red. The little foot child turned and went for home. Then just as the darkness got really dark, he bumped into a speck for mother, and she took her little foot child home in her arms and gave him his supper. Then he was his father put into bed. And I took them in bed of supper and now I'm in the highest. How this pile is hanging in the sun. Sweet boy, little fool child. All the wind in us, all the dry, sweet for many who on our land and your little family just as the sun.
You did the whole
book.
That
was the entire book. She's very excited.
Yeah.
Good job, Paisley.
Bye bye, Paisley.
Bye bye.
Bye-bye. We'll check in on you later.
We'll check in on you later.
You want to do it again?
That's our sign-off. Want to do it again.
Do it again.
That's how she's going to end all her podcasts. That was the entire book word for word.
Okay, here's what I got out of that.
Yeah, it's not...
Grandpa sneezed.
Yes.
They caught a fish and put it back in the river.
Yes.
And then there was a little fur animal.
Yes.
Okay.
That's the whole story, basically.
Okay.
The little fur child just runs around all over the place and then goes home and goes to bed.
That's what kids do.
That's the whole story, yeah. So, yeah, thought I would play that for everybody. She's got a little bit of work to do on her diction, but we'll work on that.
There's always room for improvement.
Yes, yeah. That's why she wants to do it again.
She does.
20.
Oh, okay, here it is. Stephanie and Triple H versus Kurt Angle and Ronda. This was way back in October 19, 2009.
It was 2018.
Oh, come on. Now, it'd be a different one. Was WrestleMania.
But definitely
yeah,
not October.
It was not 2009. I bet you $1,000.
Well, who cares?
Well, I care. You're giving people the wrong date.
That's what I wrote down, and that's what was on there. That's why I was kind of confused, because there was a whole bunch of stuff there, and it said WrestleMania and all this crap. Anyway.
October, what day did you say?
October 19th.
Okay, well, somebody uploaded it in October. Okay.
Look back to October 19, 2009, and see what was on there in WrestleMania.
Granny, give me a report, and then I'm going to tell you the exact day that this match took place, because I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but I was there in the building, and I can tell you for a fact it wasn't 2009. Got it?
I don't care.
Okay, well, let's get going.
Steph and Triple H versus Kurt Angle and Ronda.
I got it right here, Vinny. Calm down.
Ronda beats on Steph. Triple X grabs...
Maybe this is a different match.
I guess. I hadn't thought of that.
Ronda starts beating on Stephanie, and Triple X from the outside grabs the ref by the feet and pulls him out.
Thank God it was the feet.
Somehow Ronda and Triple H are in the ring. She punches on him. She has a sub hold on him. Kurt comes in to take over. The surf hold. Triple X gets his foot on the rope. Kurt and Ronda win.
So the finish was somebody holding Hunter and him getting his foot on the ropes.
Yes. Okay. The date, Granny, was April 8, 2018. It was in New Orleans, Louisiana. I was there. I think Vinny might have been there. Were you there? No. Vinny was not there. And it was the best match on the show.
It actually was. I do remember that.
2018.
Okay. Whatever.
Okay.
Okay. So then I got to see this Drake Maverick that's the manager of...
Yeah.
What is it? Triple X? X? Oh, shoot. There's my phone. It's Valerie.
Well, answer.
Just a minute. I'm on the show. Oh, sorry. Okay, got it. All right. So anyway, I better make sure this is shut off. I wanted to look it up and see if he wrestled, because I heard he came back, if he quit and then came back. So anyway, it was Derek Maverick. Gosh. Bruce Kendless. No holds barred. Maverick is taking a beating. Kendalls takes off Maverick's belt and uses it on him. A lot like a one-arm slam.
It's Triple X, too.
Maverick came back, slams Kendall on the table, then walks on top of the barricade and does his suicide dive. Kendalls get Maverick on the top rope, trying to drop him on his back. Maverick reverses the move and gets a Kendall for the win. I like that, so I give that a 9.
A 9?
I also give it a 9.
Wow.
For the record.
Maverick and Kennel get a 9.
I like that one. So, anyway. You want me quit now?
No.
We're just
I want you for about another hour, actually.
I only got one more. And that's the story about Stone Cold and the McMahon family.
The story?
Yeah.
We will go for an hour.
So they came in and just beat the heck out of poor Stone Cold. And so, and then another guy came in. There was three or four guys just beating the heck out of him. And so when he came to, he took after Vince and chased him out of the room. And that was kind of the end of the story that I just put down, because, but it was a long story. Oh, another thing, he went and got one of those big machines. and drop bricks and stuff on top of their motorhome. Just bash the thing to bits.
What?
Then he came back in the ring, and a bunch of people threw beer at him, and he was up on the rope opening cans of beers and slopping it up, and, oh, he was just going about.
So, Steve Austin, excuse me.
Cold Stone, yeah.
Cold Stone. Okay. Hold on a second, everyone. Breathe. So,
why?
Cold Stone had a big machine, and he dropped bricks out of it onto the McMahon's mobile home?
Motor home.
Oh, their motor home.
Yeah, he blew the thing up.
Huh.
Yeah, it was a really funny.
What a mean thing to do.
And this is on the network.
Yeah.
Vinny, get to work.
Yeah, you guys find that.
Well, we're going to look for it right now, Granny. I would not miss this.
Search bar.
On my
motorhome.
On my notes, I would have the day. Do you want me to look at my notes?
Yes, please. By all means.
You always have the accurate day, so.
Just a minute. Oh, I got so many notes here.
November 3rd. 1974.
McMahon's RV owner faces criminal charges.
Not that one.
Grand theft, are you sure? Brent McMahon joins hemp oil sales company.
Would you shut up for a second? Let Granny find this.
Well, just a minute.
Get the G1 standings while you're at it.
What's that? I guess I didn't get it.
The one time that we need the date.
Yeah, bummer. I had it up in my notes, too.
I don't think there was a date. I think you just watched some sort of weird video. Why would there be a date if it's a documentary?
That's true. That's true.
Thank you.
I probably got that because of the one where Kurt Angle and Steph.
You got that date wrong, so maybe we shouldn't look for the date for the other one.
Hey, maybe that's what it was. October 19, 2009. Could have been that one.
That's when Steve Austin dropped bricks on their mall. All right, Gray, anything else?
No.
All right, well, if you find information, I expect you to send it to me.
19.
Few ground rules here. First of all, I'd like to welcome everybody tonight to the Figure Four Online /WrestlingObserver.com in conjunction with Defy Wrestling. The Christmas party, we will be having the Q&A up here. Couple of rules. Matt has already passed out some sheets of paper. We would like to encourage audience participation. So if you have a question, perhaps you have a question about professional wrestling, you could ask Lance Storm. Maybe you have a question about audio technology, you could ask Brian Alvarez. Maybe you have a question about mixed martial arts, you could also ask our expert, Brian Alvarez. But we'd like to have people line up over here on this side, and then I will facilitate the question and answer portion. If you have one of the sheets of paper, say you're bashful, you're shy, you don't want to get up in front of us, go ahead and write down your question on the sheet of paper, and then we can collect them and we can ask those questions to our esteemed panel here tonight. Now, while I get some feedback here from the mic, just like to talk a little bit about myself first, of course. Why not? When Brian first asked me, Filthy Tom Lawler, to be a part of this Q&A, I told him to go to hell. And then I listened to one of his shows with Mike Sempervivi, and, well, here I am today. So, yes. I myself, I've been a MMA fighter for 15 years, a professional wrestler for 13 years. I've been on TV, highlight packages. You've seen me getting choked out in highlights from Chris Weidman, Ryan Bader, two MMA champions. I'm not embarrassed to say it, that I have slept with in front of a lot of people. Now, I've also had the pleasure, I mentioned earlier, Matt and Jim, I've had the pleasure of being a guest of Defy two times, being booked for Defy in the past. Unfortunately, that was before Matt and Jim had a chance to see me wrestle. So I'm not sure if I'll be back anytime soon in that capacity. But now tonight I've been asked to stay away from a lot of the disgusting and sick jokes. So we're not going to mention any of Lance's time in WCW. But you know what? Actually, since we're there, why don't we just keep going? So Lance was a champion wrestler in virtually every company that he has appeared for, from ECW, of course, to WCW, to WWE. And while he did hold the distinction of holding three belts at the same time when he debuted in WCW, that angle actually fizzled out faster than his podcast, Killing the Town, did.
Wow. Podcast is still going. I fizzled out.
So, Lance, not just a wrestler and a podcaster, but a great author as well. His books, Stormfront and Storm Warning, can be found on Kindle. And I learned quite a bit about Lance through these pages. There was anecdotes about the Hart Wrestling Academy. But most importantly, he provided a map and locations of every single Cracker Barrel in the country. Not only that, but also the locations of every Outback Steakhouse and their seasonal menu. Now, after all that was said and done, and I was done reading, I realized after 500 pages and a few hours of my life, those were the only ribs worth reading about that he wrote about. So don't waste your time.
Keep his phone off.
Keep screwing up. What do you want?
Make fun
so
of me.
Luckily, yeah, I know. Luckily, I was able to return those books. Amazon has a pretty good policy. They will take anything back that's old, disheveled, ragged. And apparently, Brian has the same policy, because Lance is back here doing Figure Four weekly. Figure Four daily. So, well, Lance is already sitting down. I thought about maybe we should ask for a chair for Lance to sit in, but we'd probably have to have somebody show him how to use it. If his pass in ECW is any is any indication. And last but not least, while Lance has had a great career in the ring, perhaps he's going to be best known for what he's done outside of that. One of the top trainers, perhaps the top trainer, perhaps the top trainer in professional wrestling. He's going to have a long-lasting impact with his students from the Storm Wrestling Academy. He's one of the few people I can say that's had his more hands on young talent than Jerry Lawler. So, Lance Storm, everybody.
That's absurd.
Now, I'm sure everybody.
There's more?
Yeah. Well, it's small. I'm sure everybody here is familiar with the Wrestling Observer podcast, which features the indomitable Dave Meltzer and his exuberant and lovable co-host, Garrett Gonzalez. Now, unfortunately, Garrett could not be here tonight, so we got the next best thing, and that is Bothell's own Brian Alvarez. So, Brian, to me, you're more than just a terrible worker and a pompous writer. Seriously, you're unbelievable as a host on the radio. You can work with anyone, from Dave to Vinny to Mike to Lance, even me. What a cast of revolving characters he's had, from IATA to his own website, and now onto a video service. And all along, there's been nothing since One Night in Sunny that's been able to turn away more people from the airwaves than Brian Alvarez has over the past few years. But really, we all love Brian. Well, most of us do. Except for pretty much every restaurant in the greater Seattle area. Whenever I hear him angry about his orders and his food, I want to tell him, Brian, you know, I got your back. I'm willing to stand up for you. And then I realize he already did that, but they couldn't see him over the counter. I'm sure there's others who dislike Brian, like Vince Russo, Eric Bischoff, Ed in San Antonio. Maybe Brent Kremen. But I think he's great. And over the past few years, he's somebody I've grown to look up to. He's kind of like a guiding light or a father, which is why I'm not surprised when he screws me every week on the radio. He's the best-selling author of WCW, just completed his new book with a foreword here from Lance Storm, which is three more words than most of you know. Brian, in great... wait a minute. Brian's in great shape. Obviously phenomenal. Looks great for his age. It must be hard when he looks that young. If I didn't know any better, I'd say he has his grandma's jeans, but now that I look, I think Lance is wearing them. So, anyways, let's get started with this Q&A. If you have any questions, right here's the place to start.
Alrighty.
After that...
Don't everybody jump up at once.
Yes, please.
All right, here we go. This is the only thing worth talking about this entire show. Barry Horowitz versus the Comet Kid. Now, we talked about this last week.
By the way, by the end of this set of tapings, they've already dropped Comet Kid, and he is Maximilian Moon.
Oh, Maximilian Moon.
Yes, they shorten it to Max, but is his given name by his mother is Maximilian Moon. It's Paul Diamond.
It's Paul Diamond, who was in Bad Company in the AWA, and he was Kato in the Orient Express.
Yeah.
Before Jamie San was a white guy in a mask pretending to be Asian, Kato was doing the same thing. So, Paul Diamond's a really good wrestler. And they had this wacky gimmick. It was going to be Conan. It didn't work out. They had the costume made. They said, Paul Diamond, put this costume on. You are now the Comet Kid. I remembered the braids. I remember the mask. I remember the wacky...
I remember the rolls.
The piping. Yeah, the weird rolls and the shoulders and down the legs. It's a weird... It's what I guess they thought outer spacemen would look like in the year 1993. Or whatever year this was. 92. I kind of remember like the confetti going off from his wrist shooters.
I don't remember that.
And like he has like sparklers, I think. So he comes out, he launches like confetti. It's from his back or from his wrist, whatever. And streamers go flying. And there's, you know, outer space music playing. And then he approaches the ring. And it is time for his spectacular entrance from the arena floor to the ring. At this point, I'm not making any of this up. At this point, the Comet Kid activates his jetpack.
Yeah.
Now, if you've never seen this, or have just forgotten like I did, you think, well, he had a jetpack to launch him over the ropes into the ring? No. He activates his jetpack, which causes steam to shoot out from the bottom of his jetpack, and then he jumps to the bottom step.
Yeah.
And it took a minute for this to sink in. Like, I'd actually... My mind wanted to think that there had been, like, a video... a glitch that this didn't actually happen. So, just to reinforce it, he activated his jetpack, and then he jumped to the second step. At this point, I was laughing so hard.
I swear to God, everybody.
I laughed.
I have never seen Vinny laugh. As long and as hard as he laughed.
I may have laughed harder at like the zombie in ECW.
No, I don't think so.
I don't think I laughed longer.
Comet Kid with his feet together doing bunny hops hops up each of these steps to the ring as rocket fuel shoots out of his fucking backpack.
We are to believe...
Propelling him up the steps.
We are to believe this is a result of his jetpack.
Yes.
Like, we can't see he's doing a squat and exploding... He's doing box jumps.
No, not even that. He's just hopping. And the thing is,
it's
like...
It's the most ridiculous thing.
You, for the... However long you've been doing this show, you have mentioned repeatedly your love for jetpacks.
Yes.
No one has ever brought up Paul Diamond's jetpack. The only thing that I can think is that they do this once and realize how fucking stupid it looks, and they never do it again. And like everybody's forgotten the single episode of Superstars where he used a jetpack to get up the steps.
It has to be.
This was so preposterous.
You gotta understand, Vince McMahon selling it like it's legit. This is not. Yeah. This is not a man in a costume pretending to have a jetpack. This is a space traveler. This is Ziggy Stardust coming to Earth. And he's showing us his magic technology, like a jetpack that allows him to fly. So already I'm in a great mood. He does the match. Barry Horowitz is awesome. Paul Diamond's a good wrestler. They're having a good match. And the Comet Kid uses such scientific techniques as a wrist lock. A standing wrist lock.
It's all goofy wrestling early with a forward roll here or there.
Yes. He puts on this wrist lock and Vince McMahon cries, quote, look at all these moves.
He said numerous times during this match that Comet Kid did a lot of moves.
He did a monkey flip. And yes. Vince cries, a lot of moves here.
That was the gimmick. He was a guy from outer space in a futuristic outfit who did a lot of moves. That's the Comet Kid.
So in the midst of one of these moves, one fan cries out, you're Jimmy Jack Funk. Well, he wasn't, but it's not a horrible guess.
Hey.
And then the Comet Kid won with a rolling fireman's carry from outer space.
Hell yeah. He was a comet. Fell on that guy.
I have a newfound respect for the new breed and how effective their time traveling gimmick was. It was much better than Comet Kid Spaceman.
There is so much bad stuff on these shows, but I do have to say that I am constantly amazed at the very goofy ideas that Vince comes up with.
He's a creative fella.
We're going to make this wacky costume, and your name is going to be Comet Kid.
With a K.
With a K. And then later, that's going to be Max, not just Max Moon, Maximilian Moon. Maximilian.
He's mad.
What?
He's mad.
And you're going to have this jetpack, and it's going to shoot gas out of it, cause you to bounce up these steps into the ring. He's explaining this. By the way, he's explaining this to Conan.
Yes. I need to go back to the jetpack. Do you realize?
Yes, I saw it.
The jetpack made his entrance into the ring clumsier and slower?
Of course.
This is the worst jetpack I ever saw. And that, everyone, is the debut of the Comet Kid. I may have forgotten it once. I promise you.
I will never forget it again.
I will not forget it a second time. Jetpack. And then the Mountie and Jimmy Hart appear on my screen, which I realize is your screen, but tonight's my screen.
I got a story, by the way.
Alright
so after the Mountie went into the Hall of Awesome, I asked Mike Sempervivi to please get the Mountie's music so that we can send it to Byline and they can play it as a bumper. Mm-hmm. He's the guy that does the music. So the next day on the show, during one of the breaks, it's the Mountie's theme.
Excellent.
So happy.
It's a great song.
And then a little later, there was another Mountie theme that just sounded horrible. I don't know what the problem was, but it was We're Not the Mounties.
That's the
that song sucks. Yeah. I told him to get rid of that one. So anyway, we have several producers for the show. One of them, Dom, is the normal producer, and he's a wrestling fan, so he knows the Mountie. Well, the Sunday producer, Scott, is not a wrestling fan. He didn't know anything about anything. He'd watched a little bit of UFC. So we're doing the show today, and a break's coming, and the Mountie's theme hits. And I'm in such a good mood, and we go to the break, and I'm so happy. And during the break, producer Scott comes on and says, what the hell was that? I said, it was the Mountie theme. He goes, well, get rid of that one.
Oh, no.
Maybe I'll play the Mickey Mouse Clubhouse next. It's like, wow. Fucking buried the Mounties theme. I couldn't even say anything. I was just so disappointed.
Yeah, you need to fire Scott, I'm afraid.
Oh, I was devastated.
So the Mountie's here. And he and Jimmy Hart, they're just like, they're already bouncing and singing before anything happens. And Jimmy Hart runs his mouth for a while about how great the Mountie is, and then it's the Mountie's turn to talk. And this is what the Mountie does. He declares, I am the Mountie! Finn says, all right, enough of that. Jimmy? And Jimmy goes, and the Mountie sings, I'm the Mountie. I'm handsome. I'm brave. I'm strong. I'm the Mountie.
He did so much better than you.
And I enforce the law. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. The Mountie always gets his man. And it ends.
No, it didn't end. He sang the song, and then he said, let's do it again.
Let's do it again.
And they start to do the song a second time, and sadly, they cut away. And Sean Mooney is covering his ears. Now, this is the part you don't even mention, Vinny. You're too excited about the fucking song. Sean Mooney never sells anything.
That's a strong, strong point.
You can do the most ridiculous Repo Man promo, and they'll go back to Sean Mooney. He'll say, the Repo Man, blah, 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 whatever he says. We come back to Sean Mooney. He is covering his ears. I have never seen Sean Mooney sell anything ever. But he sold the Mountie singing. That was a beautiful segment.
The Mountie brings me such joy.
That was better than the jetpack.
By far.
Yeah.
I think, for those of you listening to the show, you may think, man, Vince loves the Mountie. You don't get it, man. You don't get how dearly I love the Mountie. It's... He makes me so happy every single time without fail.
Yeah.
He is the best thing in all of 1992.
17. Well, this person here says, why did WWE even have to address the Mauro situation at all? Well, if you didn't hear yesterday's show, Corey Graves made a comment about Mauro Ranallo on Twitter. He basically said that he talked too much. And we didn't get enough input from Nigel McGuinness and Beth Phoenix. And Mauro and Frank Shamrock went to the building on Sunday, and then they went home. Mauro was supposed to be on the show, but he went home. And I don't know what else you want me to say about this story. I know that Corey Graves is very upset with Dave, of all people, on Twitter. You uninformed, false narrative-pushing liar. My phone works. You're a journalist, right? You can find my number. Which is ironic, because he couldn't find Mauro's number. Instead, he had to go public on Twitter. On a weekend where Mauro Ranallo himself had noted that he was expecting problems going into the weekend with his bipolar disorder. And Corey Graves still has not taken down that tweet. Corey Graves... That's all I can say about it right now. I guess we'll find out what happens over the next couple of days. But WWE did claim on the show that the reason that Mauro was not there was because he was so emotional on Saturday night that he blew his voice out and that he would be back on Wednesday.
He blew out his voice.
Now, what I can tell you is Triple H had said that he expected Mauro to be on the show on Sunday. Mauro was not on the show on Sunday. Now, I hope Mauro is there on Wednesday, but I can tell you, as of today, that I don't know if Mauro is going to be there on Wednesday. Why Corey is doubling down on this, I have absolutely no idea, but that's what he's doing. So, that's the story.
That apology of just sort of why they mentioned it on the air and how they mentioned it, of like, you know, it was emotional. He was emotional, and he blew his voice out. It's like... You know, is that trolling? Is that an actual explanation? Does that, you know, just have Triple H, since he said he was going to be there, issue a press release, you know, that doesn't have to be right on the air like, you know, real companies and sports organizations do, where you don't say anything at all about it. You just issue something. Mauro won't be there tonight. That's that. And let it go. We previously announced he did. He won't be. You know, I don't think you have to announce that to the crowd out there when you have 75 other announcers and you have so much other ridiculous stuff going on. I think you could have gotten a pass with this one and not mentioned it whatsoever. We'll see if he's there on Wednesday. You know, we'll have to see what takes place. And to your point about phone numbers, you know, I consider myself a friend of Morrow, and I don't know Corey Graves. I do like him as an announcer. I know you do not, but I do know that we had his brother on, if I'm not mistaken, right? After he was on at least one time on this show, if not twice, talking about his time down in Mexico. So it's very easy to reach out to us, too, at least to try to get through that way. So we're here and available for you.
This person here says, take the mental health aspect completely out of it. Where is it acceptable to put your colleague publicly on blast via Twitter? That's in it. What company is that considered professional behavior? Hey, think about this. Triple H did a conference call on Thursday and made basically the same comment. Why don't you guys come talk to us instead of going public on Twitter? And 2 days later, instead of going to Mauro Ranallo, Corey Graves had to make a statement on Twitter. And here's the thing. I don't know what he's mad about, but the reality of the situation is this. That tweet, there are two excuses that he can give for that tweet, okay? Excuse number one is he's a total prick. Excuse number two is, I didn't think that it was going to set Mauro off, in which case, he's an idiot. So, he can take his pick. If he's upset that we called him a prick because his excuse is he's an idiot, okay. If he's upset that people are calling him an idiot, but his excuse is that he's a prick, okay. If I called you a prick, but the actual issue is that you're an idiot, I publicly apologize for calling you a prick when you're actually an idiot. But there is no other, there is no other excuse for those tweets, right?
No. There. Look, sometimes you gotta rattle a cage, sometimes you send shots at people to wake him up or whatever, but like Corey Graves to send a shot at Mauro Ranallo, whether it was to try to endorse Beth Phoenix and Nigel McGuinness or not, was all bad for him, and he knew it was with a guy that, you know, come on. To me, it was just a cheap shot that you knew was not going to end well, and just take the L for it. I wish he would just do that and move on from it. It was a cheap shot against a fellow broadcaster on his own team that didn't need to take place. There's a lot of people, if you want to take shots at in that company, there was no need to take a shot at Morrow right there.
16.
Okay, here's my last one. Cole plus Brian.
Ah, very good match.
Say that again.
Cole plus Brian.
Plus Brian, okay.
Yeah.
I don't
equals.
Know. Was that NXT
this
or
was
what?
SmackDown.
What?
How are you?
Oh, still.
Yeah. Well, okay. No, you went from SmackDown to NXT to SmackDown.
It's like she's changing channels.
Yeah.
Somehow.
Okay. Jumps and kicks, arm twists, leg twists. And Triple H was outside watching.
Triple H. Yeah.
Triple H.
Oh, excuse me.
Back arm like hold.
Medication.
Knee in the face by Brian. Mouth chop. Uppercuts, both fall out of the ring. A commercial right in the middle of the match.
You're not wrong.
Yeah, they did that. I mean,
twice.
I'm
well aware, Granny.
Yeah.
You clearly are watching a lot of stuff on the network. When we watch this stuff on TV, there's always a commercial right in the middle of the match.
And you know that most commercials are 5 minutes long.
I'm well aware.
Yeah. So anyway, last thing is knee in the face and Adam
Cole. People think we complain just for the hell of it.
No.
Here's Granny pointing out how irritating it is. So there's a commercial right in the middle of the match for 5 minutes.
That's why I was going to talk about the commercials instead of wrestling.
You may as well.
Except then they keep saying, ask your doctor, ask your doctor. Okay.
This is what wrestling is like in the year 2019.
Yes.
That was an excellent report.
Yeah, what happened at the end? You stopped at the commercial.
No, I did. Wait a minute. What did I say?
She said there was a commercial right in the middle of the match.
Yeah, then we talked about the commercial.
After
and
that.
Then we didn't hear who won or what you scored it.
I just told you Adam Cole won.
Okay.
What's the score? Middle commercial came on middle of the match, and then there was a knee in the face, and that's what
okay.
That's how he won.
Okay,
so I give that a pretty good 8.
Wow.
That was a pretty good match.
Okay.
Granny is a good judge of match quality.
She's in a role, yeah.
I hate wrestling.
After that match, that's the one you decided that you hated wrestling?
All of them.
And you gave it an 8.
I know. Well, you have to, if it's halfway decent.
You have to be fair, even if you hate it.
Yeah, that's right.
I understand,
that's...
Granny. I understand.
Yep.
That also runs in the family. All right.
I'll be honest. That caught me off guard.